I focus on vehicles and fuels, and we all got here via cars, and so I thought, well, of course, this is all part of everyday life for all of us, and I want to touch a little bit on where we're going in the future of vehicles. And when we look to the future, of course, what that means is moving beyond oil and moving to new forms of clean alternative fuels. And my focus today is going to be on electricity as one of those clean alternative fuels. And while I love to talk about cars, what I'm going to focus on today is more of the system theme, how it is that electric vehicles integrate with the rest of the power system, and what are the policies that we can put in place to really maximize the value for the people that are driving the electric vehicles. That both, it's good for the consumer, it's also good for building that marketplace. And we know that we're sort of at the beginning of an electric vehicle market, and we want to spur that along. And so we'll talk about some of those policies. Before I get into electric vehicles, however, I want to talk a little bit about the progress that we're already seeing in our more conventional vehicles. And this is largely driven by policies that have been enacted over the last couple of years. We're in a great trajectory. We're going in the right direction from a fuel efficiency perspective. And of course, as we consume less fuel, that means that the greenhouse gas emissions associated with the vehicles is also going the opposite direction, which is down, which is absolutely what we want. So if you look just in terms of what the policies that have been enacted to help spur this, in 2009, about the mid-year through the year, President Obama announced that he was going to work with the state of California and the federal agencies, both EPA and the Department of Transportation, to put in place standards that would be the first ramp up in standards in decades from model years 2012 to 2016. That, just that announcement itself of those new performance standards for fuel efficiency gave the industry certainty of where the pathways was going to be in terms of what was going to be demanded in the marketplace. That signal was vital to having the auto industry start to invest in new technologies. And so what we're seeing is that in the marketplace, people are able to choose these more fuel-efficient vehicles because they're now so much more available. About a year later, President Obama came back and he said, okay, we want to set a longer-term target, provide even more certainty to the industry. And so now we have standards that go from model year 2017 all the way out to 2025. They go to the equivalent of 54.5 miles per gallon. So the way to put that in your mind is to say, in 2025, a new vehicle on average is going to consume about half as much fuel as the typical vehicle that's on the road today. So great advancements both in fuel efficiency, moving us away from oil, reducing that demand, and also reducing our carbon footprint from transportation. And as I mentioned, this means more choices for consumers. So just in the time of from model year 2009 to 2013, if you look at kind of a characterization of the number of fuel-efficient models, you know, that's compact, the way we've done it here, compacts and subcompacts greater than 30 miles per gallon, or mid-sized car greater than 25, crossovers greater than 20, 28 to 61 models has been the change. In other words, there's been basically a doubling of popular models, and these are all models that sell over 30,000 units a year into the fleet, the new vehicle fleet. So this is great news for consumers. Now, another great opportunity for consumers is the fact that now we're starting to see more choices in terms of electric vehicles being available. And while this is still, like I said, a slice of the market, the sales of electric vehicles are doubling year over year. They're more than doubling, actually. And so when we first started to see electric vehicles, of course, probably many of you are familiar, and maybe there's some out in the parking lot, the Chevy Volt and the Nissan Leaf were the first ones we heard about, the Tesla Roadster, and now the Tesla Model S. In other words, just a few manufacturers. Now, if you look at the 10 major manufacturers, all of them either have electric vehicle offerings or are expanding into multiple electric vehicle offerings or will have within the next couple of years. So now, again, more choices for consumers into this emerging market. So that really makes us think about, well, what does it mean for electricity as a fuel? With maybe the exception of some of the high school students that are here, I certainly remember, and I would think that most of you remember, taking road trips, and we didn't have GPS in our cars, and we didn't have smartphones to tell us where to go. In fact, we used to pull in to a gas station and not only fill up with gas, but we may actually buy a map, something printed on paper, and we would use that to figure out how to get from point A to point B. I know, these days are long gone, right? You know, how did I figure out how to get here? Well, I looked on Google, of course, you know, that's the way. So, but the oil industry had a huge role in enabling transportation. And now we're moving to the fact that electricity is going to be one of our fuels for the future. And how can the electricity industry help enable us to travel in our cars? And one thing about the electricity industry that's different from the oil industry, there's many things that are different, of course, but it's a very heavily regulated industry in that the public utility commissions in all the different states, they actually help set the price and the availability because they want to make sure that when you turn on the lights go on, that everyone has that service. And so there's a much different sort of state control over electricity as a fuel. Now, one of the things that we want to make sure that every consumer has available to them is this idea of driving on cheap electricity. Now, electricity as a fuel is already cheaper than gasoline. Let's compare gasoline and electricity in terms of a gallon of gasoline equivalent, because that's how people think, right? Everybody understands miles per gallon. So let's think about what the cost would be to fuel up on electricity analogous to going to the pump. That's gasoline prices. And of course, every international incident or major hurricane has affected gasoline prices and oil prices. And it's a world market, and there's a huge amount of volatility and uncertainty. So not only are the prices high, but they're changing, and we don't know what they're going to be in the future. And in fact, we have historical numbers here, but then looking to the future, we have two estimates. Now, this is based on the national average electricity price. Of course, none of us actually pay the national average electricity price. It varies tremendously by which utility service area you're in. And so the average U.S. residential electricity price is, that's around a buck a gallon equivalent. But if I lived in Douglas County in Washington State, where I get a lot of my electricity from hydro dams, I'm paying less than 50 cents a gallon equivalent. Well, I'm a Con Ed customer, actually, and I live in Westchester, and so mine is 10 times that value. If I lived in California and I had bought an electric vehicle and that pushed my house into a different tier structure under the PG&E rate, then I would be even higher again. And so the issue there is that now the difference between gasoline and driving on electricity becomes smaller, and that makes the economic argument for moving to electricity harder for consumers. Of course, PG&E actually took some action. They put in place an EV rate, and so they allowed consumers to realize that benefit. There's over 3,000 electric utilities across the country, and so there's a great opportunity to have some more consistency across areas. We all know what the price of a gallon of gasoline is, and it's changing all the time, and we're always sort of aware of it because we drive around, we see that sign, and we lock it into our head, and we actually think about how we might change our practices on a day-to-day basis based on what that price is doing. What's a kilowatt hour? How many people understand what that means, and how far can I drive on one? I don't know. So there's a real opportunity here to take that electricity price and try to put it into something that people understand, to put it into something to give them an idea of how far they could actually drive on that. There's a price transparency that could happen. And again, this is another role where the electric utility commissions can come in and help make sure that the utilities give that price transparency to consumers. There's another aspect of this that integrates with this whole notion of moving towards electricity generated from renewable sources and energy efficiency. And there was a trial run out in California by BMW where they gave access to a bunch of mini E's, electric vehicles, to consumers. And they asked them, how did that affect the way you think? And one person said, well, driving the car has definitely changed how I look at my energy use. After living with the car for a while, and again, this is an all-electric vehicle, I learned that I could go further with the same amount of energy if I simply changed my driving style a little. I think that got me thinking that I could also do more and use less at home by making some simple changes. Here's a great opportunity for utilities now to engage with the consumer on energy efficiency programs. And oh, by the way, what's the electricity that is going in to power that electric car? But do you have an opportunity to put solar panels on your house? Do you have access to kind of electricity system that allows you to pay for renewable delivery? Things like that. So it's a great opportunity to engage the customer to go beyond just what they're doing with their car, but to build it into their overall view on what they're doing with their energy system. Now, the electric vehicles integrated with the grid in the right way can also be a benefit to the overall grid. That's going to benefit all ratepayers, whether they own an electric vehicle or not. So if we can put that electric vehicle load off peak, where we already have a lot of capacity, we can maintain the reliability of the grid, we can make greater use of those existing assets that we may have overcapacity with, and that essentially is better for the cost return on those assets. So there's a broad base of benefit here. Now, there's an education that needs to happen as well to make sure that we get to that broad-based benefit and we help consumers learn how to charge their vehicles off-peak. Washington, D.C., where they weren't sort of educating and didn't have the time-of-use rates to get consumers to plug in sort of in the off-peak time, so people were just coming home and plugging in their vehicles whenever they wanted to. And a lot of that electric vehicle, this is just electric vehicle load, was showing up during the time that the system could be at its peak needs, when a lot of air conditioners were running at home or in businesses. The counterexample to that is San Diego, where they gave a really aggressive off-peak use rate for plugging in vehicles and really did a lot of outreach to consumers to make sure that they understood that and took advantage of it. And what happened is everybody shifted their load to what they referred to as the super off-peak time. So now they're not charging their vehicles until after midnight, and they're getting it done before 5 in the morning. And now, is this hard to do? Absolutely not, because we already have systems, whether it's on our smartphones that through an app that you get with the car or in the car itself, that basically allow you to schedule the way that you're going to charge your vehicle. And even determining the rate at which you charge can be important as well. So I'm going to just summarize with some of the ideas here that we've talked about in terms of the role that the utility commissions and the states, and actually it's not just the utility commissions, but a lot of agencies within the states, can really help push along this movement towards electric vehicles and more sustainable transportation. So we want to make sure that we can maximize that consumer value. We want to make sure that people have access to the best off-peak rates. We want to make sure that we're maximizing the environmental benefit and also ensuring the security of the grid, the reliability of the grid, promoting energy efficiency and clean electricity, and also remove other barriers that might be in the way in terms of building codes, making sure that electric service providers are regulated at the appropriate level. Just because I'm somebody that puts in a charging station and sell electricity doesn't mean that I'm also a full-blown utility and not necessarily to be regulated at that level. And I think finally, there's a great opportunity for agencies and other stakeholders to work together. So when it comes to electric vehicles, of course, we're all stakeholders because we all drive. You have the utilities, you have environmentalists, you have automakers, you have the infrastructure providers, both the charging stations and renewable energy providers, you have labor who puts in a lot of these systems, you have, as I mentioned, multiple government agencies, the PSC, Department of Environmental Conservation, you have NYSERDA, you have DOT, you have DMV, all of these folks would be involved. So there's a great opportunity for us to move forward. Actually, New York is a regional leader in this area, and we look forward to continuing to work with many stakeholders to keep this moving forward.